Good morning. Today is Thursday, March the 11th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Chief Probation Officer Sean Brennan. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Hey, you know, any way to cut your commute in half?
I know I'm just the sub for the district attorney, but I'm pleased to be here. I have some relatives up on Neyland, so they'll be sure. That
oh, really?
Last time I was on here, they knew I had a job still. They knew I had a job still, so this is going to be reassuring to them.
At least you can bring the cranberry sauce to Thanksgiving now, huh? Oh, well, we have changed how we intro the show in the last couple
of
years. So, and actually, these are a little bit seem to be easier to answer, which puts more pressure on to get it right, being one of everybody. All right. Ever wonder why ice cubes stick together in a glass?
Have I ever wondered that?
Yeah.
The answer to that question is no, I've never wondered that.
Do you know the answer? Do you know why?
No, I do not.
All right. Pressure causes ice to melt. In fact, this is what enables a glacier to move. The tremendous weight of a glacier causes the ice on the very bottom to melt, creating a layer of water on which the glacier glides. Tough for me to say. When two ice cubes in a glass of water touch for a prolonged period, the slight pressure of one against the other causes a little bit of ice at the point of contact to melt. The melted water then flows away from the point of contact and immediately refreezes. This refrozen water forms a sort of weld that causes the ice cubes to stick together. You didn't do that well in physics either, did you?
Apparently not.
Yeah. Or in bartending school. I mean, take your pick.
I guess that's good. I'm a probation officer then.
Yeah. Oh, gee. So what is the status of Humboldt County probation? I know that for most of us, there's shock and awe at the ratios. There's shock and awe at the trust. What's the general status right now? If you were on a 10-point scale, where are we?
In regards to probation, I think it's much like the rest of the community. We're dealing with the impacts of COVID, right? So in March, we had to shut down and balance the safety of the community with the public health safety concerns. So we figured out how to do a lot of our work digitally, and so we have moved to digital platforms to do contacts with offenders. We have focused more on doing field contacts and residence verifications and really reaching out to people and trying to help them through this time too, because, you know, people on the margins, when you start having these issues, you know, they're more at risk and their life destabilizes more than people who have more resources and assets. So, you know, it was really just trying to figure out how to get the staff through that and get through probationers through that. What we experienced also was, you know, the court shut down, and so one of the primary places that we get referrals is from the court. So as criminal cases slowed down, we stopped getting new cases as much, and then it took them a while to figure out how to start the court back up, and it's still not operating at high capacity. They're dealing with high, serious kind of cases.
The big nasties instead of the regular stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So what that means is there are a lot of things like probation violations that are not resolved. So if you violate the terms and conditions of your probation,
who cares?
It doesn't get processed. You'll get a court date months out. And if you don't show up for that court date, you get another warrant. And if you get a warrant for that, you will be, you know, cited and released by the police department or the sheriff's department, whoever contacts you, and then you'll get another court date. So there are a lot of these things sort of in limbo that we're going to have to deal with and resolve as the court begins full operations.
Once capacity is there.
Right. So it's just been a really challenging situation because you'll have people that are kind of in the margins of probation that are not doing really well, and they're somebody having some contact, and sometimes they're not, and just trying to sort of manage them through that process.
What percentage, ballparky, of folks on probation are trying to get their act together? I mean, they're not the ones that you have to worry about because the legal obligation, but you really don't have to worry about them going off the deep end or violating or doing, you know, going stupid, all that kind of stuff.
So let's say there's about 1,200 people on probation right now. We use an actuarial risk tool that sort of sorts them out on a level of perceived risk to the future, right? So basically what it is
And it's insurance.
It's like an insurance thing, but basically what it looks at is your age, how many crimes you've committed in the past, and depending on the types of crimes, they'll say this is the likelihood for you to commit a felony in the future in the next 3 years. And so right off the bat, one-third of those are identified as low risk, meaning that there is about a 10% chance that they would commit a new felony in the next 3 years.
And these are just felons.
These are all people on felony probation. So if you think about that, right off the get-go, we have a whole one-third of the population on a formal supervision are going to do fine. They don't really need any intervention. They don't need any monitoring much from us. We put them on a report by phone sort of system, and they recidivate only like 10% of the time, so 90% of them are successful.
They send you Christmas cards.
They
thank you very much.
They made a mistake.
Time. Yeah.
They made a mistake. They suffered the consequence for that mistake. That consequence was enough for them to change or deter their behavior, and they're getting on with their life right off the get-go. There is another group that can be successful with intervention, and we supervise and target those behaviors which we think will help them be successful. And the people in the middle and the higher ranges, they're successful. They get off probation successfully 60% of the time. That doesn't mean that they don't have violations along the way, but their behavior at the end is sufficient enough that they didn't get the probation revoked and they made it off successfully. And then,
so when you say intervention, Sean, that means somebody paying attention to them, somebody helping them out, kind of a mentor, advisor, facilitator, coordinator?
It's a bunch of things. So if you want to think about how people change their behavior, you can sort of just think about yourself or anybody. Is the first thing you look at is you look at the individual themselves. What's their biology? What's their belief system? You know, what's their thinking patterns like?
Core values.
Core values, right? And then those core values generate and sort of inform how you act and think. And then outside of that, there, you know, you have your family and your peers. And then outside of that, you have places where you spend a lot of time, like school or employment. And then farther out there, you have service providers like probation and drug treatment and things like that. And what you want to do if you're on the outside is you want to get under those inside circles and you want to start affecting those. So we do things that are called cognitive behavioral therapies. Basically, we start talking to people about their values, their beliefs, and their thinking patterns and how they can make better choices to get better outcomes.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:24. Is it supposed to be sunny all day long? This is looking like we're back to spring.
I think it's going to rain this weekend. But
oh, great. Okay, I'll have to get the work done on Saturday then. Thanks, Sean.
You're welcome.
Mr. Sunshine is with us this morning.
I'm well known for my optimism.
Oh, gee. With the probation, you know, you also have got the juvenile area of responsibility. Is there such a thing as juvenile probation?
Absolutely. We have...
Is it similar or is there distinctions?
It is different, mostly because of the focus of the juvenile court and the juvenile delinquency system is not just community safety and rehabilitation, but it's also really about the child's wellness and really bringing them into adulthood successfully. So
health is a...
Yes, we have a lot more. There's a lot more emphasis on the young person's needs and how to make them successful. You know, and that's manifested in that for a lot of these young people, they become wards of the probation department. So the probation department has an actual responsibility to shepherd them through into adulthood.
Oh, really? So you're almost like they're a public guardian and... To some extent?
Some extent, right. They can still be placed with their parent, but we have the court, the juvenile court, has basically intervened in their life and said, these are the things we think you need to do to be successful. And we have conversations with the families and parents, so we get into what is called RAP teams and child and family team meetings, where we sort of talk about, hey, where does the family want to go? What do they think the solutions are? And how can we support the family as a whole to make those solutions manifest?
If there's one of the kids that you're dealing with, typically what else are the other, are the brothers and sisters also in the same boat, or, you know, is the parent, or, you know, if the family is still intact, parents, do they come from that? Is it a modeling that's going on, or what are those tendencies?
It's complicated, right? So, but it's best understood as a family system. So the young person is emerging as an individual out of a family system, and that family system really drives a lot of their behaviors and thoughts and their experiences. So, you know, as you talk in Humboldt County about adverse childhood experiences, a lot of the young people that get on probation in Humboldt County will have had all those adverse experiences, right? So they usually have had interventions in the school system. They've had interventions with behavioral health, child welfare services. These
they've already gone through the gauntlet, so to speak.
Well, for a lot of the more serious ones, these behaviors and problems have manifested earlier in their life. These experiences have affected them earlier in their life. And as they come into, you know, adolescence, some of them, those experiences are not being projected outward, right? So, you know, so they start experiencing, like, you know, transactional violence with people. So they're getting into fights, or they're stealing things, or they're running away from home. If you have a young person in their early teens that's running away from home, that's pretty indicative of some real issues in the family system, or, you know, they've entered into a really negative peer system where that's pulling them away from their family system. So it is a whole system of issues and complexities that you're trying to unpack and figure out how do you build resiliency for that young person to move forward.
And the others in the family, I would suspect.
Yes. Except sometimes that family, you know, those children will experience that trauma differently, and they'll process it differently. So you might have one that's acting out. This one, you know, may be having trouble in school, but they might not be acting out in the delinquency system. But we try to help the whole family move through that. And so the skills that we provide the parents, like parent project and things like that, or teach them how to interact with their kids and provide the social support. So it should help the younger children as well. And our hope is they never come to our system. You know,
yeah, it'd be nice to be one and done, huh?
There are kids that occasionally will commit one offense and come to probation. We usually tell them, don't ever do that again. We don't want to see you again. Here's some places that you can go in the community. And those kids usually don't come back. It's the ones that this is an evolving, they've matriculated through their experiences, and now, you know, they're having real substantive behavioral issues. And, you know, those take more interventions and efforts to help.
The percentages you had with the felon probation side of the equation, do those run true with juvenile probation also, or are those numbers percentages?
It's a little more difficult. Most of the kids, first of all, we have a very small number. So we supervise 60 kids in Humboldt County right now. 20 of them are, 30 of them are wards. So
just for clarification for those unfamiliar, a ward is?
Ward is someone that the court has said that the probation department is responsible for their well-being. You can get on an informal contract or a diversion where you come in with your parent. Let's say you did a petty theft. You come in with your parent to see a probation officer. The probation officer says, hey, this is a crime. This has consequences. You need to pay them back. Here's some things, referrals in the community we want you to do. You go back with your parents. Understand if you continue this behavior, this was what could happen to you. So we're giving them the lecture. Send them back on their way. Send them to some community resources if they need that. And most of them don't come back. The other ones, the behavioral issues, it's really more about finding successful treatment and interventions for them. And those usually are, I mean, those kids face challenges throughout their life. And one of the challenges in the system is when they start hitting the transitional age youth period is how they find employment and how they sort of develop an independent lifestyle. And those things.
So almost pre-emancipation, or?
The system has recognized that that population, if they've been in wardship or placement, that they will extend that age up to like 21. So we provide support to them after they get off probation and after they get out of placement, and they're sort of
kind of like a counselor at that point. Then
it's more augmented
formalized
services. So you can get like housing assistance, and you can get employment assistance, and you can get additional stipends and things like that.
It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Sean Brenneman from Humboldt County Probation. He's the head. You don't have one of those Packer hats, do you?
No.
The cheese heads?
No, I don't.
Even though you're the big cheese? You don't have one of those?
No, they never really issued me one. They gave me a badge.
Well,
that was
Maggie,
pretty cool.
Come on, let's step up to the plate here. Maybe reach out to Karen Deemer and she can have one of her family send something out.
What are you doing to me? I don't need a cheese head showing
up.
Oh,
just trying to let you flow with it. So, Sean, as you look at some of the different challenges that are out with probation, you've also got the detention part of the program, if you will, or I guess it's more the codification. Okay. If you're bad, you get a result. Here's the result. You know, instead of just kind of threat. Okay, here's the actual. Billy's got his jail. You've got juvie hall, sort of, kind of. Is the detention a significant deterrent for early on the juvenile folks? Or if they do end up spending a couple of days, a couple of weeks in there, is that enough to kind of get them to recenter themselves?
So that's one of the differences I would say then is that the juvenile hall is not a place for punishment. It is for the safety of the youth. So they're in a situation where, unfortunately, detention is the safest place for them. It's for the safety of the community because their behaviors are so at risk that we are worried about releasing them back in the community and what harm that might cause. And it is a place to sort of triage them and figure out what the appropriate level of service is. So it really isn't – we don't use it as a punishment tool. It is really about public safety management and stabilization and moving them into the right resource and intervention.
But certainly a loss of freedom,
yes,
and separation can be interpreted.
I'm not saying it doesn't feel that way. I'm saying the intentionality of it is different.
Right.
So, you know, that impacts how it's operated, though, for instance. So the inside of a juvenile hall feels it is a locked facility, and at the end of the day you have to go into a locked room to sleep. But the intentionality of it's a lot different, and the way our staff interact with them are a lot different than what would happen in an adult facility.
But you couldn't call it going to camp.
No, I don't think I ever intimated that. But it really, the outlook is different, and most, like the average stay in there is either, you know, is 45 days. And that's really about going through the court process and finding the right placement for them. And a lot of young people.
It's more the legal, the processing time rather than, okay, you're going to be here for 45 days, even though you could leave in 3 days. We're going to keep you for 45.
The entire welfare institution code and the whole detention system part of it is set up that we're trying to find the least restrictive placement for that youth. So when the police bring them to the front door, we're trying to decide, can they go home tonight? You know, can they go home on an electronic monitor or on a contract with a parent? Can we set some rules and guidelines about how they will conduct themselves at their home so we can release them right away? And so a lot of kids come in and they're either, first of all, we don't let them through the door at all. We say, no, cite them and give them back to their parents and we'll refer this over to the district attorney or they can come to probation. Or they'll come in. If we can't get a hold of their parents, it's like a day or two. We get them in court in the next 2 days, and then we figure out, oh, yeah, you can go out and you go back to your home, and here's an ankle monitor for a while, and we want to make sure that you're going to school, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
What are the stereotypes that are accurate?
Well, you'd have to delineate what the stereotypes are?
Well, you know what a lot of people think about juvie hall, about the kids that are in there, about what it takes to get in there, what the experience is like. Are any of those true, or are all of them fiction?
It's probably dependent on who you ask in the community and what narratives they're telling themselves about juvenile hall. Some people say that, you know, it's a pipeline to prison. You know, all I would say to that is there are 13 kids in the juvenile hall today. The ones that are in there for serious offenses, you know, homicide, rape, possible assault with a firearm.
It's not the shoplifter.
We've done a good job over the last 10 years. It's 2008. I guess it's almost 12 years now. Of using a wrist tool to really make sure we're not bringing in high needs, low criminal kids. 20 years ago, when I started in probation, 24 years ago, I guess now I'm getting old. You know, there were kids acting out at home where it's always a fight every night with their parents, and they would rip out a phone out of the side of the wall, and we'd get these cases for interfering with a telecommunication device. And so these kids would come to probation for that. But they're also using methamphetamine, and they're associating with people in the adult criminals. And so they're just running wild, and we would bring them into the system. The problem is that they would be hard for them to get out of the system, because their behaviors would never allow them to follow the conditions of their wardship. So over the last, you know, 10, 15 years, 20 years or whatever, we've moved those cases out. And so now those are being referred at a community level, and we're not making them wards.
So you never see them. Somebody
right.
else is interacting somewhere.
You know, we're taking more felonies, crimes of violence, assaults, things like that. Behaviors
the heavy duty stuff.
Things with victims.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, I think we've done a good job, and the people that are on probation are the ones that have significant behavior problems that need to be addressed. And usually if you look at the data, they've already been through child welfare system. They've been through, you know, IEPs and school contracts, and they've been to behavioral health, and their behavior is such that now is that, you know, they're interacting with the delinquency system. And, you know, we need to continue to be creative and challenge ourselves to figure out better outcomes for them.
That's what I was going to ask you. So knowing that and the toolkit that you have, how do you start to work with those youngsters, those people, and get them out of the system, or get them to understand and comprehend what's going on, where it may lead and where it may not lead, and if they want to go there?
Again, it's back to, you know, start working on them with their core values and their family. So you try to stabilize their family and get them to be more supportive of the behaviors that would make that young person successful.
If you got somebody in there for a homicide or for a rape,
homicides are usually going to go to a secure detention track, or used to be DJJ, but that's getting sent back down to the counties. So we're in the process of developing a multi-year in custody program for them.
But okay, so those aren't the ones you're talking about.
But it's still be the same issue, right? You're still going to want to have them when they come out, whenever they come out, to have a family support or a social support that they can rely on that will reaffirm the positive changes that they want to make in their life. You want to be able to have them set up so that they can have educational success. You want them to have a pathway forward that they can find a job and be able to support themselves. So it's really the same focus. There's just public safety concerns that require them to be in custody.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Chief Probation Officer Sean Brenman. Sean, juvie hall. we've seen the construction. Many of us have. You know, if we go to the dog park, if we have somebody in the convalescent hospital, if we spend any time at General Hospital, or just drive by and see all the big trucks driving. I know it was a dream of your predecessors. That would be plural.
Yeah.
Yeah, yours too. What is the status of that facility?
We broke ground April 17th on a year and a half project. April 2017, I'm sorry. April 2017, we broke ground on a year and a half project, and we are now in 2021. We are almost complete with phase one, which is the construction of the juvenile hall. So they're completing a punch list, and once they complete the punch list, we will move the young people over to the new facility. And then phase two will commence, which is the teardown of the old juvenile hall and the building of the recreation yard and the covered recreation yard in the footprint of the old juvenile hall.
So instead of having southern exposure for playing or running around, it's northern exposure.
Yes.
I wouldn't be tickled with that one. But then again, that's okay. Are the requirements, have they changed very, very much or significant dramatic changes?
Absolutely. If you come and see the new juvenile hall, it is twice the square footage of the old juvenile hall. It can hold 30 kids, which is basically this. We can hold in the old juvenile hall 26, but it's really about not having long, dark hallways. It's open areas. It's
visual.
A lot of program space. Rooms, a lot of ability for them to have outside people come in and provide programming and classes and things like that. So we're really excited about being able to move them in there. It's going to be a world of difference both for our staff and for the kids' experience there.
I would think relief also.
Oh, you have no idea. You know, we have had staff working on this for the last 4 years, and we have people displaced out of the juvenile probation building into the New Horizons locked facility working out of that for the last year. So we're excited to get into the building as soon as possible.
Well, hopefully we can do one of these in 6 months and you say, hey, guess what happened last week?
Yes, that is my fervent hope.
All right, see you then. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Brian.
See everybody tomorrow.